Against my inclinations, I shall be a pessimist tonight. And if I'm going to be pessimistic, I want to say that I'm going to include the women when I speak about men. 20th century civilization may be most briefly defined as a civilization of scientific discovery and of technical progress. The 20th century is merely the inheritor and legatee of developments which began in the 17th and 18th century and reached their culmination in the 19th and 20th. It is difficult to give an unequivocal answer to the question whether this scientific and technical development has improved mankind, because every rational, spiritual, and technical development has a twofold effect. It increases the power of both good and evil. But it is possible to give an unambiguously negative answer to the hopes and dreams which this civilization had for itself. For the 20th century is in truth primarily distinguished by the fact that it has disillusioned all the hopes of the 18th and 19th centuries. These centuries dreamed of justice, peace, world civilization, and universal enlightenment. The realities of the 20th century are war instead of peace, poverty and class conflict instead of justice, nationalistic passion instead of world government, and racial prejudice instead of world enlightenment. The hopes of a rationalistic and technical age were that reason would lift mankind more and more above the conflict of interest and the play of passion, and that technical development would enhance mutuality by increasing interdependence. But the fact is that both increasing rationality and technical progress merely accentuate forces previously given, the force of anarchy as well as the force of mutuality, the dynamics of injustice as well as the dynamics of justice, the extent of social cooperation, and also the intensity of social conflict. Let us elaborate this thesis by a more detailed analysis of the specific hopes of the 18th and 19th century and the disillusionment in our own. First, the rationalists of the 18th century believed that they could abolish fanaticism and conflict in human life by destroying priesthoods and religion. They rightly discerned that all fanaticism has a religious quality, but they wrongly believed that this was merely the product of given historic religions. The fact is that our allegedly irreligious age is involved in fratricidal conflicts in which fanatic prophets and priest kings of primitive religions destroy every concept of a common humanity, and they do it without the benefit of clergy. Fanaticism is an inevitable concomitant of human spirituality, because man is a creature who knows no limits and always imagines that his limited truth is the final truth. The abolition of a high religion which teaches men to worship a God above all human good has not helped man to know his limits. On the contrary, it makes room for idolatrous religions of collective self-worship. Second, modern democratic idealists believed that the establishment of political equality would finally result in the creation of economic equality. This is partly true and partly false. The man who has a vote but no job can use his vote to secure unemployment relief, but his vote does not seem potent enough to change a system which creates unemployment. Economic power is in many respects more basic than political power and seems to bend the latter to its will. Thirdly, modern bourgeois idealists, the so-called physiocrats, believe that if only the state would not interfere with economic process, the process would of itself achieve both peace and justice by balancing interest against interest in competitive harmony. Modern capitalism is based upon this assumption of laissez-faire. The assumption is almost wholly false. Justice and peace were not achieved, for the process began with a disproportion of power which a technical civilization accentuated. The injustice of an agrarian civilization is static. The injustice of a commercial and industrial civilization is dynamic. It does not only make for inequality, but it makes for the kind of inequality which undermines the very process of industry. Inequality of economic power makes for inequality of economic privilege, and inequality of privilege prevents the producer from consuming the rough equivalent of his productive capacity. Hence, periodic crises of overproduction and unemployment. Internationally, the theories of the physocrats worked as badly as within the nation. The theory was that the free exchange of goods would make for world peace. But the fact is that each modern nation, producing more goods than it consumes, becomes constitutionally unmutual and tries to prevent other nations from entering its markets while it seeks to enter theirs. Hence, the hopes of an international economic community have gone up in the smoke of conflicting nationalistic economic systems. Some of the idealists of modernity place their hope in education and the advancement of rationality rather than in any specific social program. Education would eliminate prejudice and vulgarity, passion and self-interest. While we will always need more and not less education, the problem is really more complex than the educators had assumed. Man never becomes, no matter how high he rises, man never becomes a discarnate mind or intelligence. His rational processes always remain wedded to his interests. The rational man becomes both more imperialistic and more universal in his sympathies. He seeks, on the one hand, to subordinate his interests to the general welfare, but on the other hand, to establish the general welfare from the center of his will and from the center of his nation. Imperialism is an inevitable byproduct of all high cultural development. There is, furthermore, always the possibility of rationalism creating a vacuum of general skepticism when the rationalists discover their imperialism and have an uneasy conscience about it. This skepticism leads to a vacuum into which primitive religions and loyalties rush. While educators tell us that we have a race between education and catastrophe, Germany, where there was more education per square head than in any other nation, has succumbed to the madness of primitive tribalism. The higher the tensions of life and society, the greater the peril of insanity, particularly the peril of a mad retrogression to primitive tribal simplicity, which is the very core of fascism. All the technical achievements which are related to increasing rationality stand under the same law. The radio spread such enlightened words as I am now speaking to millions. But it also multiplies vulgarity, and it becomes the perfect tool of Dr. Goebbels' ministry of lies. The aeroplane, about which naive idealists were certain that it would increase the mutuality of nations, has become the most horrible tool of international conflict. The threat of destruction from the air is the nightmare of Europe. All this explains why modern civilization, instead of realizing its simple hopes, stands in greater peril than any previous civilization. I do confess that it does not explain why modern civilization has succumbed to these perils to the degree in which it has. About that tragic fact, volumes could be written. We must content ourselves with the mere assertion of an obvious fact that we are living in an age of destruction and disintegration, somewhat similar to that of the decay of the Roman Empire and that of the disintegration of the feudal order. It is not impossible to use the modern machine and all the modern instruments of human interdependence for essentially constructive purposes. But the fact is that we have not used them that way, and that destruction is now upon us. In Europe, the conflict is between the dynamic corruption of fascism and the static and moribund corruption of the democracies. Our own democratic structure and spirit is slightly more healthy. We therefore have a fighting chance to bring our social organization and our culture into the conformity with the needs of a technical society. But European civilization as such, seems to me to be doomed. A technical age destroys itself more quickly than one which had a simpler machinery. Its anarchy becomes more deadly with each new invention. This does not mean that we must sit idly and fiddle while Rome burns. Nothing can change the fact that we are living in an age of decay. That we have to accept. But it is important to build at least the foundation of a new house while the old one is being destroyed. For if we fail to do that, we may sink into the barbarism of homeless nomads. A new dark age is not inevitable, but it is a possibility, I should say even a probability. To avoid it may seem too moderate an enterprise to engage the imagination and the ambition of modern man. But the trouble with modern man, I mean the man of the 18th and 19th and 20th century, has always been that he has not understood human nature nor his own modern society well enough to achieve the virtue of humility and to project a society, therefore, which would mitigate the perennial evils in man as well as to enhance his power for good.